There's a little delay. Okay, it looks like we're live. Perfect. Okay, thank you all for joining us today. I'm Jessica Levesque. I'm the executive director at C4. And today we're really excited to talk about the cryptocurrency security standard. And we have our steering committee here with us today. So let's start by going around and introducing ourselves. So first up, let's go with Josh up in the corner.
Hey, Josh McDougall here with C4, proud board member, one of the co-authors of the original CCSS, and currently working at Slow Ninja.
Thank you. All right, Dirk.
Hi, sorry, I'm Dirk Anderson here, and I am also one of the committee members here, and I'm also on the Certified Bitcoin Professional Committee, and currently the CIO, CTO at Salt Lending.
Thank you. Michael?
Hi, everyone. My name is Michael Perklin. I'm proud to be one of the founders of C4 and one of the founding members that wrote the initial drafts of the CCSS. After spending a five-year stint at Shapeshift US, I'm now a proud member of the decentralized Shapeshift DAO, where I work to keep everything decentralized.
Thank you. Ron?
Thank you, Jessica. My name is Ron Stoner. I am a committee member, the architect of the CCSS auditor exam, and the head of security over at CASA.
Awesome. All right. And now Petri, our committee chair, you introduce yourself, please.
Thanks, Jessica. So Petri Basson, my background is finance and IT. So chartered accountant, CISA, and then 6 certificates in IT. And I used to be previously at KPMG, at the moment running Hash Data, which is data aggregation and normalization, and then also consulting with quite a few firms in the space.
Thank you. Noah?
Hey, everybody. I'm Noah Buxton. I'm a partner at Armanino. Armanino is a top 20 public accounting firm, and I get to lead our blockchain and digital assets industry practice. My background is actually in IT and controls assurance. It started our risk assurance practice here at the firm before I got the crypto bug, and I get to do crypto full-time all the time now. So I'm a happy guy.
Love it. And Jameson.
Hi, I'm the CTO of CASA. I was probably one of the first people to take the Certified Bitcoin Professional exam in early 2014 and had that on my resume when I then went full-time Bitcoin and joined BitGo, which was one of the founding members about a year later, which resulted in me getting even deeper into the standard over the coming years. And it's been great to be a part of the committee for the past few years.
Awesome. And Andreas Antonopoulos is also a committee member, but he unfortunately was unable to make it to the call today, but he probably says hello to everyone. So thank you all for being here. Really appreciate it. I'm excited to talk about the CCSS. So it's the Cryptocurrency Security Standard. It has been around for a while, and I'm excited for Michael Perklin, one of the founders, to start explaining what that is. So Michael, will you jump in?
Thanks, Jessica. It's been a long road. C4 launched in May 2014, and very shortly after, we began work on the CCSS. At the time, in 2014, I was working full-time as a blockchain security expert. Or I guess back then, it was a Bitcoin security expert, because there really was only Bitcoin at the time. Historically, whenever I would do security audits in the traditional world, I would audit against a set of standards, maybe the ISO 27001 or SOC 2, or I would always audit against some standard. And it would be very easy to tell a client, hey, you're not meeting the bar because these three controls are not present in your system. But when it came to cryptocurrency systems, at the time, only a few months before, MT Gox was hacked, losing countless funds. And it seemed very clear that every company was going their own way. Every company was implementing whatever security controls they thought was good for them, but nobody was adhering to any kind of common standard. And it occurred to C4 that somebody should have a standard that outlines all the security controls that are necessary to properly protect cryptocurrency. And if nobody else is going to be building the standard, why not C4? So work began on the CCSS in June 2014 through a collaboration of a lot of different companies, including BitGo, where Jameson's involvement came from, as well as a variety of other exchanges whose CTOs or CISOs offered to provide feedback on the initial draft. This all culminated in the launch of the CCSS in January 2015 at the very first Satoshi Roundtable. Since then, the CCSS has been referenced by many different companies on their websites, proclaiming to adhere to the standard, as well as countries' governments. A variety of countries have required that their financial services adhere to the CCSS standard if they are going to be getting involved in cryptocurrency. This long road of the CCSS has led us here today, where we only just a few days ago launched the CCSSA, the auditor exam, which certifies a person and their individual knowledge of the CCSS, making them a proper candidate for securing your business with their knowledge. And did I miss anything, Jessica?
I think that was a good overview. Does anybody else on the committee want to say anything about the CCSS in general before we get into some of the specifics of it?
Yeah, I will just add that a lot of these things that we're going to jump in with these specifics were actually modeled after real world behavior, right? So when you look at some of the traditional and historical hacks and things that have happened in this industry, a lot of the specifics that we're going to discuss are directly applicable to those events or the lack of security that allowed some of those things to transpire. So this is battle tested, and it's based off real world scenarios. This isn't just stuff that we're coming up with because it sounds nice. These are applicable controls that can be applied to help secure those cryptocurrency based information systems.
That's a great point, Ron. The initial committee that put together the first set of controls for the CCSS, we did so by analyzing every single hack that had occurred so far from the beginning of Bitcoin all the way through 2014. And that is where all the controls come from. That's a great point, Ron.
Well, and it's interesting that people have said that. They've looked at the standard and said specifically like, oh, this is maybe why this came into play, because they remember some of that. So yeah, go ahead, Dirk.
I would just add to that too, right? One of the things that I think is really interesting about the CCSS is that it is kind of a modular security compliance set of controls. So it's not intending to replace ISO 27000 or NIST or PCI or anything else like that, right? It is a very specific set of controls around handling cryptocurrency or digital assets. And, you know, and as such can just kind of be plugged in alongside of any other sort of like controls frameworks or anything you might be using for security overall in an organization.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I might just say that I think everybody on this call, is many of them Bitcoin OGs, right? Definitely believe in decentralization. We believe in, you know, sovereign money and self-custody, but we also acknowledge that this marketplace, it has become a capital markets marketplace, right? And it needs on-ramps and off-ramps. There will continue to be service providers and centralized players that allow ready access for anything from retail to institutions to get into this space. And if that's going to be the case, this market needs the proper infrastructure of trust and transparency and a focused security standard that deals with actually custody of cryptographic private keys related to cryptos is 100% necessary. So this is a really exciting thing, I think, for the larger marketplace.
Yeah, for sure. And without going into details, it feels especially pertinent this week with some of the things that have been going on. So let's talk a little bit about what the standard is. So Petri, do you want to get in there and talk a little bit about how it's structured with the categories and aspect controls and what that looks like? And someone from our team will put the link to the standard in the YouTube chat.
Definitely. So, I mean, firstly, pass off to Ron, who sort of authored this and wrote a lot of it. And as we've mentioned, a lot of this is very practical. So, I mean, at a very high level, we've got two main categories, the cryptographic asset management and then the operations side of it. The cryptographic key management is really focused on those keys that are you're using. So over there, we're going into key seed and seed generation, wallet creation, key storage, key usage, key compromise, key holder grant revoke. So as Dirk mentioned, Noah, you've got standards out there already. But I remember when I actually did some of these audits, you in a SOC 2 in an ISO world, it's very difficult. Those standards don't provide for the crypto or the private key specific type controls. So that's where this is really useful. You can actually get into the details and have a standard to test against. And then the operations side, you go into security testing and audits, data sanitization, proof of reserve and audit logs. So those are more of the operational controls that you're expecting to see around these keys. And then I think one of the things that's very useful for those of you when you're looking at the table is you'll also see the rationale behind these controls. Because, I mean, the cryptocurrency industry is always evolving. People find better ways to do things. And that's where that rationale is really useful. You can see what the principle is that we're trying to achieve to, for example, ensure that software hasn't been modified when it's being used. And for an auditor, that's really useful. So sometimes you might not meet the control to the letter, but you know what the principle is that you're trying to actually achieve there. And I think for any auditor, that's actually really useful when you're doing these audits. Now, in terms of scoping, in terms of all the controls, I think there's going to always be questions around that. And that's where we definitely welcome anyone's input and questions around this. We've already had a lot of community members asking questions, helping us to strengthen this. And I think that's almost where the decentralized aspect comes into this. We want everyone to be helping to build the standard. So it's not just this group of the steering committee, it's everyone's input and we're busy building it out. I mean, we've already made a few updates. As I think Michael said, when this was originally designed, this was almost a Bitcoin security standard because that was the gold standard back then. But we have made a few updates already to be able to accommodate other technologies and other tokens as well.
One of the interesting things about the list of the aspects and controls that that Petri listed that are that make up the CCSS is the fact that each group focuses on a different area of an information system. Now, most people think of an information system as, oh, the computer that you're using. But when you're instituting a system at a company, yes, the computer, the hardware is one piece of that information system, but the software that's running on the hardware is another piece. The humans that interact with the system is another piece, and the policies and procedures that they follow as well. So there's actually five different aspects of a information system: hardware, software, policies, procedures, and the education of the personnel who are interacting. So the CCSS dives into the life cycle of all of those moving parts. How does the key get created? How is it born? How does it live? How does it die? When it comes to the people, how are they initially granted access to the system? And when are they revoked access in the end? The entire life cycle of all five of those components, whether they be the hardware, software, policy, procedure, or education, are covered in the CCSS. And that's why I think it really makes a very tight, holistic security for any information system.
Yeah, Ron, did you want to jump in and talk a little bit about it as well?
I was just going to add to Michael's point. There's some other things that this standard goes into that we see in cryptocurrency-based information systems that I've never seen a lot of guidance about. And that's some of the caveat information about things like dust transactions, right? If you're doing reporting and accounting, or you have a potential denial of service scenarios that could occur there, the standard actually encompasses a lot of that. What do we do for things like reorgs or forks where we're changing the chain tip, or we've got two different copies of chains out there? These are things where the standard's trying to provide some guidance and some controls to make sure these systems are being architected correctly and securely to prevent a lot of the issues that we're seeing today, right? A PCI audit, a SOC audit, some of the ones we've mentioned earlier, they may not catch the fact that private key information is being stored in clear text somewhere. This is the type of standard I think that fills in those gaps and really takes a deep dive into all of those creation and usage and storage methodologies to ensure things are being done correctly.
Yeah, and I think as we're talking about it, we'll start to get into some of the specifics and the details of the standard. So there are two categories. There's the cryptographic asset management, and then there's the operations side of it. And if you look at the matrix, you'll see those two separate categories, but then within it, there are a lot of aspects. And we tried to add rationales as well to the standard, which explains why this is something that matters and gives a little bit more information for either an entity that's cryptocurrency system is being audited or the auditor that's actually going in and looking at these systems as well. If you have questions about any of the parts of the standard, feel free to put them in the chat, either in Twitter or on YouTube, and we'll do our best to answer those as well. I think it's interesting too to talk a little bit about what some of the aspects or requirements that maybe are a little bit unique to the to cryptocurrency. I mean, obviously this entire standard is specifically about cryptocurrency, but there are some pieces that I think people have had questions about in particular. And I'm sorry to call you out, Michael, on this, but I know that you've answered this for me before, but the proof of reserve section, would you be able to speak a little bit on that in particular?
Yeah, absolutely. It's occurred numerous times in the past where a exchange or some company that is taking custody of a lot of different cryptocurrencies, they actually don't have as much as they report that they do. In other words, the reserves of cryptocurrency assets that they control does not match what they are telling the public. This is usually a sign of either some kind of an exploit or some kind of fraud. Either way, it's something that every user of the system needs to be aware of when it's happening. So the proof of reserve requirement of the CCSS allows the auditor, or it provides a check for the auditor to perform to make sure that all of the assets that the company claims to be able to control really are controllable by that company, and no funds have gone missing.
Great, thank you for explaining that, Josh.
Yeah, I was just gonna, as far as the topic of, you know, what makes the CCSS unique to other standards, and again, its whole design is to complement other standards specifically for this purpose. And the one main thing that comes out is there's no undo in cryptocurrency and blockchains and things like that. So a lot of the standard came of the fact that, you know, although it's one thing to lose data, and certainly we see businesses losing customer data all the time, and not that that's a good thing, but they don't ever actually lose the data. They give the data away, someone else has a copy of the data, but they also still have the data themselves unless there's been some sort of destruction. But when these assets are stolen, when digital assets are gone, they're actually gone. So a lot of this standard is putting in, you know, extra controls in place to make sure that there's a very, very one strict, you know, audit trail to know what has happened and who has happened by, as well as to prevent things from happening either accidentally or maliciously.
That point dovetails actually too with what Michael was just saying around proof of reserves. I mean, this is an area you guys are gonna have to stop me talking about because it's a passion area for me, but it's, you know, from Greg Maxwell's early, you know, 2014 theory around proof of reserves to what we have today is a wide disparity of practice. And as Michael noted, there seems to be this unwritten rule, right? I think docs had the unwritten rule early. They operated under reserved when their hack was not disclosed for some time. But essentially the unwritten rule in our industry from the exchange perspective is that, yeah, you deposit Bitcoin, that Bitcoin might be in an omnibus or shared wallet at the exchange, but largely it's going to be a one-to-one reserve to what the exchange owes you. But this is a really important area where CCSS is including this as a baseline best practice and requirement. To the extent that we start to see this required through the audit process, it's going to force best practice, it's going to force uniformity, at these exchanges, right? There's really no service provider that shouldn't be able to provide this level of access, essentially, or transparency to their customers, right? And historically, it's been the case that exchanges will they'll lean on security actually as the reason that they shouldn't do this, or they'll say that potentially could expose them to a vulnerability. But that thankfully is in the rearview mirror. We've done it, right? Kraken has done it, a $19 billion proof of reserves against Bitcoin and Ether, and others are starting to adopt. So anyway, not to take the proof of reserves tangent, but that is a really cool nugget that's within the CCSS, but that has a larger impact on the way these platforms treat their customers and provide information to the larger market. So
I think one thing maybe to add on there that was a very interesting point is a while back we got the question of, why do you have a proof of reserves? This is a security standard. Why do you do that? And I think it's important to build that link between the security controls and those private keys and the assets, because you don't want to have perfect security, but the assets aren't actually even linked to those assets. So I think this actually builds that link when we're doing an audit.
Yeah, absolutely. Does anyone else want to touch on any of the specific aspects right now before we move into talking about the levels? Was there anything else anyone wanted to point out? You're just like, can't wait to talk about because it's so fun. I feel like people might think we're super nerdy, but it is super fun to think about this and to spend time focusing on how to make this industry, this field, this space that we all really care about safer. Not just for ourselves, but for the people that we know who are trying to get into crypto and aren't sure how to do it or where to go. And having something that says, yes, this is a secure place to have your crypto be held, even if they're just holding it for a minute while you're doing a bridge, something like that, I think it really matters. So Dirk, did you want to jump in and talk about the different levels of the CCSS? So to explain that, the CCSS is the standard, the CCSSA is the auditor, and there's an exam for that. And entities, cryptocurrency systems, are certified at different levels, and they are all secure. But Dirk, do you want to explain what the differences are for us?
Yeah, absolutely. So the way that each one of the controls is set up in the standard, there are three different levels, or up to three different levels of requirements for that particular control. And that can, there are some controls that maybe only have one or two, and it might be that there is so it's level one, two, and three, level one being the baseline, level three being kind of the more paranoid secure. There might be, for example, nothing in level one, right? That this control really is about kind of that enhanced security. It might also be that there is nothing in level three, because this control is really just there's a baseline and you just got to meet that baseline, period, right? There's no other stuff. It's just, you got to be doing this, period. But then there are some controls as well that have different requirements in each one of the controls. A good example of that is, I think it's 1.03.03, which is one of the controls around backing up your seeds. And the first one basically just says you have to have environmental protection against environmental controls, right? So you don't want a flood or something like that to, destroy your ability to access your keys or your key backups. The second level is, adds on to that? That they have to be stored geographically separate, right? So that they're not, all your key backups aren't in the same place as you're operating every day, so that you can actually go get them if there is a flood or something like that. And then the last one actually takes into account electromagnetic attacks and that sort of thing, right? So if you're storing them only on a digital electronic magnetic format, right, they're susceptible to a remote EMF type pulse, whether that's sunspots or intentional, right? So that's kind of an example of the progression of the different levels. And so each one of the questions has those. And in a lot of cases, right, so the organization I work for was one of the early folks to actually go through the audit process. And we found that there were a couple where we were just like, you know what, from a business perspective, the way that we do business, it doesn't make sense for us to try and be a three or even a two, right? We're doing the baseline level of things here in that particular control to protect the data. But because of the way that we do business, or because of the business we're in, it might not make sense to do some of those others. So there's that, the the standard was designed not to be a one size fits all necessarily, but to be a one standard is useful for all sort of approach. And So there's each of those. And the only other thing I'll add then is, right, that the overall, you get an overall kind of rating that also falls into that 1, 2, 3, which is the whole Navy's only as fast as the slowest ship, right? So if you have, if all of your scores are up to 2s and 3s, right, but you have a couple areas where you don't have a 3, then your overall score for the CCSS is going to be a 2. If you have, you know, one category, a single category that you're only a 1 in, overall score is going to be a 1. But what I always try to stress there is that 1 is good, solid baseline security, right? The whole idea of being a level 1 is you're doing the stuff you should be doing. The level 2s and the level 3s are, hey, you know what, you're doing the stuff you should be doing, but also you're doing $100 billion, you know, in transactions, you know, a day or a month, or what, maybe you should up your game a little bit, right? So the idea being that there's options there depending on what fits the risk factors associated with your business.
That's awesome, Michael.
That's a great point there, Dirk. The overall levels that Dirk was just mentioning, I think is super important to stress, because it's actually one of the most commonly misunderstood pieces of the CCSS. When you look at any information system's ability to reach level 1 or level 2 or level 3, naturally you think, well, level 3 has got to be the best, so I've got to strive for the best. The reality is, level 1 is secure. Most information systems out there, I would be willing to wager, do not even meet level 1. It takes a considerable effort to reach level 1 compliance with the CCSS. And if your organization has reached level 1, that is a huge accomplishment. Level 2 and level 3 are even more secure and are paranoid secure. And truth be told, that paranoid level of security, while it does maximize the confidentiality or the integrity or the availability of your assets, it'll probably also be so onerous on your staff to use that information system while maintaining such a high degree of security that it may actually slow you down. A perfect example is the one that Dirk gave. You want your keys to be secure against environmental issues. As long as it's secure against fire and flood, that is secure enough. And that is a level 1 compliance. Your keys will not be burned. Your keys will not be flooded off of a piece of paper. But you can also go farther beyond that. You can spread them out over multiple geographic areas, and you can protect them against an electromagnetic pulse. Now, how rare and how infrequent are electromagnetic pulses? But they are still technically a risk, and it could wipe a USB flash drive without your knowledge or intent. So that's why level 3 is the paranoid level, but level 1 is still an incredible achievement and should not be discounted as being insecure.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing, right? Is a good number of us on this call came out of backgrounds in pre-blockchain, pre-crypto information security, right? So we came at this from a risk-based perspective, right? Trying to make this a risk-based standard, and so that the controls that you can implement and put into place are appropriate from a cost perspective, from a management and oversight perspective, to the business you're doing, and it just doesn't always make sense, right? And it may be that you're doing, you know, kind of ephemeral transactions, and you can literally expose the secrets or the keys to your private wallets after you've done them, because that wallet never gets used anymore, right? I mean, in theory, right, that you could have that kind of a risk profile, but that for the moments, as long as the data is sitting on a wallet, you absolutely have to have the backups, right? So it's not always just necessarily even what we think of, you know, from a confidentiality trumps everything else sort of perspective, right? So the design of the whole structure was allowed to just let people apply it as it made sense in their business or operations.
So this is a question that comes from the chat that relates to what we're talking about with the different levels. The question is, what is an example of a data sanitization policy failure? And that's 2.02 for the aspect objective. But it goes up in level, obviously, of what is the most secure way. But can someone explain what a failure of proper data sanitization would look like? And then we can go into the levels as well. Michael?
Sure, I'll start off. I'm going based on memory here, but I believe that one specific control, it works as a binary on or off. You either have sanitized your data or you have not sanitized your data. There are no multiple levels of sanitization that you can achieve for that level.
There is actually, that was one of the updates. There's two levels.
In that case, I'm going to turn it over to one of the other committee members who is more familiar with that one control.
I'm actually glad you brought that up, though, because I feel like what you just said, you've looked at this so much, but it's a good reminder that the standard is huge and it's all encompassing and you can't just like memorize it and just know it, which is why it exists like in two different formats on our website.
And it's living and breathing and changing.
Exactly. I feel like that was such a good example of how we do change it as needed. So, oddly, that was a really effective way to prove that. So thank you. Ron, do you want to explain the different levels? I see you unmuted.
Yeah, so I think what Michael's actually referring to is the level one control, where he's talking about the binary option of, does your staff have the tools and the knowledge to perform data sanitization? And what we're really talking about here is, think about the hard drives that people are putting data on, right? Or they're storing keys and things like that, or the backups that Dirk's talking about. We've seen through history where those drives get mailed off, or people forget they're in the storage room, or it goes to the landfill. And hackers, much like myself, are going, this has some really good information on it, right? So corporations that are taking, and information systems that are taking their security seriously, are implementing this DSP, this data sanitization policy. So for level one, if you're implementing that in your organization or your system or whatever you're looking at, complying with these different types of controls, the level one is just to say, do we have people on staff that's aware of this, how to do it, and operating in that procedure. Level two goes a little bit further, as we said. Level one's great. You're wiping that data. You're ensuring those CD-ROMs, those USB drives, and whatever you're doing to store your information and your data, you're taking procedures and steps to wipe it. Level two goes a little bit further, where it actually has a policy that details all of that. So just like, you know, policies at work and stuff like that, sometimes there's the unspoken policy, but when the rubber meets the road, is there a document that lists who's responsible for this? How often are they doing it? Have they been trained in it? We're really wanting to see a policy that details all of that. And then with level three, we're going a step further. We have level one with the people that know how to do it. Level two, we have a policy that defines who's doing it. Now at level three, we have an audit trail of all of those actions that are being taken to wipe that media or perform data sanitization. So as you're seeing with the hierarchical structure there, we're getting a little bit better at each level. And as Dirk said, level one is nothing to laugh at. I would feel comfortable if somebody told me, we wipe our data, we use this tool, this is the person responsible. No, it's not written in a policy, but we'll get there. We'll get to level two eventually, right? We know we can do a little bit better to help close those gaps and ensure the system's working as optimized and efficiently as it can be.
Yeah, and a clear failure would just be, right, like that record-keeping requirement, right? You see that there's an in-scope system that doesn't, you know, you've missed a day, essentially, you've missed a week, whatever the cycle is that's defined by the policy, the auditor goes to sample that. And if you find it, that would be a potential failure of the control or an exception, you know, to that control.
Yeah, and I think as we talked a little bit about how this is updated as needed within the standard, and then the exam as well will be updated to reflect that. And we will continue to do live streams or information sharing about these specific aspects. So if everything, I know there are questions popping up in the chat, everything that we haven't covered yet, we probably won't get to everything today, but we will do more of these to share information. And we're also going to release a video of Ron and Petri that are there explaining some of the controls as well in another video, which will be released probably next week. So I feel like this is a good start to explain what the standard is about and what it kind of represents and what is inside of the standard when you look at it. But why don't we talk a little bit about why it matters? So Jameson, do you want to talk about, you said a little bit about how you started working at BitGo and how you then realized how important something like this is, but can you explain why you think the CCSS matters?
Sure. You know, it exists for the same reason that other widely used standards are in existence and have, you know, been compiled. It's because we're in a space where if you make a mistake, if you overlook something, there's potentially disastrous consequences. And I think most of us here have been in this ecosystem for quite a while. It is a very new ecosystem. I mean, only really about a decade from an industry perspective of professional, quote unquote, businesses that are taking custody of people's cryptographic assets and private keys and managing them and whatnot. And so obviously, when you have a new system, it's the same type of ongoing war that we see with any type of security. It's a constant battle of attack versus defense, and people on both sides of that are constantly learning as the other side is trying new things. I think over the past decade, we've seen over 100 high-profile hacks of custodians where, you know, private keys were exfiltrated, massive amounts of money were lost. And if each failure doesn't result in the rest of the ecosystem learning, then we're going to have a really bad time getting this technology to be mainstream, because people are not going to be comfortable with it. It's going to seem like it's just too unsafe for people to even deal with. So there's a reputation issue. It's a knowledge sharing issue. There's no good reason why large amounts of money should be lost from different entities in the exact same way, because we have the ability to coordinate, to create these best practices and standards, you know, from the mistakes and failures of the past, and sort of continue ratcheting up the sort of overall security of the entire industry. Now, one of the big problems, I would say, with crypto in general is that self-custody is not as widespread as we would probably like to see. The sort of default way that almost everybody gets into this ecosystem is through a custodial provider. So it's incredibly important that, you know, whatever your default setup is also fairly secure. Once again, sort of getting back to the reputation and people feeling comfortable using these technologies. So why is it tricky? Well, prior to having a standard, you really had to go by gut feeling, by sort of the history of any given provider. So, you know, when I think back to early days when I was on MTGOX, that was like the first exchange I ever used. Even then, I was a fairly technical guy. You know, I was a web developer. I was familiar with sort of best practices for general web development. And I could see that, you know, MTGOX as a service was kind of rough around the edges. There were some red flags that made me a little nervous trusting them with a lot of money. But for a less sophisticated, less technical person, they would probably miss most of that stuff. And you really had no idea what was going on behind the scenes. These custodians tend to be black boxes. And so in order to get an idea about their reputation, you're really limited to what you can do with, like, you interacting with them or trying to watch them interact with other people. So what we're doing here is we're kind of we're creating a trustworthy mechanism for people to more quantitatively judge the security of various entities in the ecosystem. And of course, we do that by having the organization of CCSS, which is managing the standard, managing the auditor exam, and basically us putting our reputation out there saying, these people understand the standard and we have made sure that they know what the controls are. And from there, they can use that reputation to then attest that they have checked that company X, Y, Z meets a certain threshold. So I see this as a sort of way of uplifting a large part of the industry by leveraging our collective experience and reputation and letting the rest of the industry improve their standing rather than them just saying, yes, we're secure. They can say, yes, we have a level of security that is recognized by many reputable people and entities throughout this ecosystem that, we are following the best practices, at least the best practices as they are known today. Like we said, this is going to be a continuously evolving thing.
Yeah, that was a great rundown of it. I think a couple other people wanted to jump in too. I saw unmutes or hands up. Michael, I think you were one. Josh, do you want to start?
I only reacted with with this emoji because I agreed with everything Jameson said.
I thought it was a hand, but you can't see it on YouTube, but it was an applause. He's very excited, which I am too. I think that was a great way of explaining why it matters. Josh, do you want to add some more?
I just wanted to add, obviously, that business to customer thing is really important because, it's all of us, it's all new people joining the industry and getting involved. And we want to make sure that there's ways that they can see those red flags or see someone who, might be trustable in the space. But I think there's also a really important business to business component about what the CCSS allows for. And, one of those main kind of situations, let's say either an insurer coming into a business and really needing to know, like, sorry, things got exciting in the car. Business to business aspects of being able to know when when an insurer can trust a business or understanding what policies can apply to that business. Having other, reputable firms in the industry who normally do security assessments, giving them the tools so that way they can go in and understand, oh, I'm dealing with a cryptocurrency company. There's other things I should be looking for as well before I, give my approval on this business as well. Or even, businesses merging and doing due diligence and things like that too, and understanding, what is this bicycle that I'm buying, is it actually going to work down the street or is it all kind of smoke and mirrors? So I think obviously protecting customers is massive. And obviously I think that's our core desire is to make sure that the normal users of the space are protected, but helping businesses interact with each other, I think is a really, really valuable step to helping the industry as a whole mature as well.
Maybe something to add is one of the things I always think about is the old principle of trust but verify. And in this industry, a lot of us are trusting at the moment, but the verify is very hard. I mean, a custodian can't open up their doors for everyone to come and check. So by having a standard, by having CCSSAs out there who can actually verify this, it opens up the entire industry and it helps you to be able to trust to say, yes, someone has actually gone in here and checked that they're doing all of the stuff that they say on their website that they're doing.
I think it's so important too, because people who aren't super technical and are end users need other people who are trusted, who are able to actually evaluate these things, to go in and take a look at it and to have that system of checks and balances if you're unable to do that yourself. So the standard, I think, is going to, it already has changed the industry, in my opinion, and it will more so as we continue to get people certified as auditors and get entities, cryptocurrency systems certified at the different levels as well. Noah, did you want to add to that?
CISOs and CTOs love standards and frameworks and methodologies that they can easily communicate, right? The board level, they need to communicate to the board level of companies and key investors that they're doing the right things. But technical gibberish doesn't work for that, even though it might be all of the right things. So these kind of things where you can say, yeah, we're focused, we're following a focused security standard that's directly related to how we secure custodial crypto and digital assets. That's the kind of thing that goes upward very effectively, and it also trickles downward through the organization very effectively as well, right? This is a way for CISOs and CTOs, they should be welcoming this with open arms. I know many are, because you can drive policy and activity across the team in a very sort of uniform and known way, right? It's not just because the CTO has a great idea. It's no, we're following a standard, right? And this is our roadmap. So.
And I would add just on top of that and kind of to that, you know, value question we talked earlier about, maybe, you know, you only do something at a level one, and even though everything else is at a two and three, so overall you're, you know, maybe at a level one, but there's still value in that, right? There's still value in the standard, even if you can't be validated against it. There are businesses that the way that they operate, right, that they're not going to validate against the entire CCSS standard, right? Maybe they use a third party custodian for some of their assets or something, right? There may be situations and business environments where people or organizations are not going to validate against the entire standard. Absolutely doesn't deplete the use, exactly for the reasons that Noah was talking about, that the standard still can bring value, right? You can still use it as a tool in your environment and just say, okay, these are the five questions or the five sections of the CCSS that really apply to what we're doing and how we're doing it. Let's make sure that we're aligned to those. So it can still be, you know, a partial alignment type tool. And, and maybe the other questions apply to that third party, custodian you're using or something. And you use those to evaluate who's going to be doing that for you. So even when it's not about necessarily validating against the entire standard, there's still a lot of value there and that it can bring to your organization.
Yeah, and personally too, I mean, I know I've looked at the standard compared to what I've done with the assets I hold. So yeah, I think that's a really good point. I do also want to point out, this is a question somebody had in the chat about how you know if an entity has had their system audited. And so we will be sharing with that entity will get a badge that says that they have been audited, and there's going to be a number on their badge that shows what level they're certified as. And then also it will be on our website. So if you hear that an entity has gone through the audit and they're saying they're level three at this point, that means that they have self-audited. So as of August 4th, it does not mean that they have officially been certified by C4. It means that they looked at it and determined themselves what level they were at. And that is very different than having an external party come in and look at what's going on and really evaluate the entire standard. And we have a couple audits that actually have already started. And from what I've heard, the companies are surprised at how kind of difficult it is to be able to get this, to get certified at level one. Yeah, I saw Michael, your finger went up. Yep, it's even level one is a challenge.
That's a great point, Sertica, Jessica, about the difference between compliance and certification. The CCSS has been released in the wild since January 2015. Many companies, many governments have referenced the standard and have used it for self-audits and determining whether or not they are compliant with the standard. But up until August 3rd, nobody has been certified with that compliance. And now that we finally have a set of certified auditors, I'm excited to see how many of these companies that have been working with the CCSS for so long, how many will choose to go through an audit by one of the certified auditors so that they can display that badge proudly on their website and have C4 list them as a certified information system.
I did just want to clarify real quickly, though, there with what Jessica said, that C4 is not actually a certifying body, right? We're not certifying that people are compliant as an organization. We're training auditor, we're developing the standard, training people on the standard, certifying auditors against their knowledge of the standard to go out and audit. And then we maintain a record source for verification that that has happened. So that a certified auditor has gone out and done the audit and validated them at a particular level, but that C4 is not, because that kind of goes against kind of the, I mean, it's way too centralized for the folks on this call, right? to do that, right? That's not the goal, to make ourselves the authority on that, right? We're providing tools so that this can happen, but not trying to be a certifying body, unlike PCI Security Council or something like that.
Yeah, that's a good point. We're relying on the auditors to go in and do the audits. That leads us into talking about how to become an auditor. Josh, do you want to talk about what it looks like to become a CCSSA?
Sure. So as with all of our certifications, the Certified Bitcoin Professional, Certified Ethereum Professional, now we have the Cryptocurrency Security Standard Auditor certification. So it's a 100 question exam that has about 90 minutes to take the exam. You sign up through our site and take the exam. This one, it'll have kind of two main sections of information. One is going to be just a general understanding of the standard itself, of the cryptocurrency security standard. Also, how you apply the cryptocurrency security standard while auditing a business. Beyond that, though, there's also four different scenarios that you'll want to study. These are each different organizations with different controls and details in play. And I really recommend, if you're going to do the CCSSA exam, you might want to actually not only print those out and have them handy, but me personally, when I took the exam, I did a CCSS assessment. I took out my checklist. And I did an assessment on each of those, so that way I knew kind of where they sat at each going into that exam. And when I went into that exam, I could just reference my assessment to easily answer those questions. So there's a little bit of I would say cheat code, but really it's just being prepared. If you wanna really kick that test butt, I would highly recommend. And I mean, it's really just good practice too. Do a CCSS assessment, grab the checklist. One thing that we haven't actually mentioned, but I think it's a pretty important piece of information, the CCSS, the Cryptocurrency Security Standard, is an open source standard. This is something that's free for you to use. When we say businesses can apply it in their daily business and not even worry about certification, just make sure that they follow those standards, this is an open document that you're able to use. It's not like the ISO where you gotta, you know, pay a chunk of money for a PDF. This is something that we want the entire industry to have. So take that CCSS, go to the, grab the checklist, get those scenarios audited, get that practice in, and then you'll be more than ready to crush that exam and become an auditor.
Yeah, and I think it's important too to note that not just anyone can or should be a CCSSA. You do need to have that security background. So I've been in crypto for 5 years and I am not going to become a CCSSA because I do not have that kind of prerequisite knowledge about how to look at security systems. And so most of the people who are going towards the exam that want to become auditors have some background on either auditing and or other systems. So like they're either, QSAs or some other type of auditor, and they know how to look into systems. So if you're not an auditor, we do have an auditor guide that explains a lot of the processes, but that knowledge about security is super important to understand what the standard is even asking you to do in order to comply. So I just wanted to point that out, that there is a rich history there of things that you do need to know to understand how the standard should actually be enforced when you're looking at it. But let's talk about the auditor guide. So we're going to put a link to it in the chats. And Noah, do you want to talk a little bit about what the auditor guide entails and the peer review process?
Yeah, absolutely. Nice segue. You're a great MC. So yeah, we did produce an auditor guide. I think there's sort of a notable piece of information here too, is that, you know, standards don't often come, excuse me, with the guide immediately, right? They don't often come with direct implementation tools about how you engage with a client, you know, what types of audit or assessment methodologies and procedures you can apply to get the work done, to get to an audit report or a certification end state. And so we thought that was really important. And so, you know, the idea here is to provide really usable information about how do you go from looking at, you know, an information system or working with management who's a maintained a cryptocurrency information system, and then how do you actually audit that? How do you engage with them? How do you work through the process to get to the end state? And so you mentioned peer reviews, and that is a really important part here. I think that goes to the some of the initial ethos here, the way I understand it, right, is that it isn't a just a trust us or trust one person necessarily in this equation. And this is also something that's not necessarily commonplace across security standards or certifications to have a peer review of this nature. You do see in things like PCI DSS or ISO, you know, a certifying body stamp over an internal audit or an independent audit. So there are examples of it, but I think this is an even deeper peer review process, right? It's not a rubber stamp. It's a review of the initial CSSA's work. And so that's, I think, an important layer here, you know, to the end product is ultimately more uniform when you think about a peer review process. And so that's an important component. The auditor guide is developed, give credit to multiple people on the call because I didn't write it myself, right? This was a group effort and largely wasn't written by me. So Petri gets a lot of credit. But, you know, Petri's background, for instance, isn't in audit, right? He's conducted more of these external assessments and audits than he probably wants to remember. And so there's that, this guide is informed by assurance industry best practices, methodologies and procedures as well. And so that's super important, right? That I think it's very important, at least, right, that the end certification under the hood of that is really best practices that are performed in the audits. The way that, you know, you assess a population of information, you assess policy, you assess how controls are implemented, managed and monitored over time. There's information about sampling in there. So it should be a really usable guide for people, for auditors. Yeah, the details, yeah, completeness, accuracy, et cetera. So I think that's a great starting point, right? Like, frankly, if you look at like SOC 2, if you want to call that a security standard, it's really more of a reporting, a controls reporting standard. But, you know, and often these reports are issued by CPAs. That's kind of an interesting example where there is a SOC guide, but it doesn't actually give you, it doesn't really give the auditor probably what they would really want. It's like, wait, what sampling methodology should I use? Like, how many samples should I select here? What happens is CPA firms and other certifying bodies tend to kind of implement their own, you know, their own manual, right, internally, their own policy of how they go about doing these audits. And so there again, you have disparity in practice that can emerge, where one firm, you know, might be willing to sign off with very little sampling or a lower level of control testing, where I think the CCSSA, the way this auditor guide is built, is there's some spirit of uniformity here, right, at the outset. So that's good stuff. Yeah, and I think we're probably close on time. So the last thing that's been noted is that, hey, this is an evolving thing. It does have it is open source and open to input from the community here. And so the auditor guide will inevitably grow, become more detailed, become more usable based on the community's input.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do know we're at time, so I want to continue answering some of the questions we've had in the chat, but give everyone who's on this call an opportunity to say goodbye. If you need to go on to the next thing, that's totally fine. I'm going to stay on and answer. So if you need to go, say goodbye. We so appreciate you spending the time you already have. So I see Josh, Michael.
Gotta go, everybody. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Noah. Appreciate it. For those who
thanks for a great chat, everyone.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. We'll stay and answer some of the other questions. So we'll see you, the rest of you, soon. So for those of you that are able to stay, I did want to talk a little bit. I wanted to say one thing about the auditor process and the peer review is we have actually just like within the past couple of weeks even updated it. So we really are listening to the community and making sure that this is something that is that the standard is the best it can be, and that the audit process works for entities, for the original CCSSA and the peer reviewer. And importantly, that the entire purpose of this is so that end users are able to know where to go, who to trust. And if there are things that need to be updated along the way, we're certainly going to do it. Obviously, we have a committed group of people here. And Dirk, did you want to say something about that?
I just wanted to build off of that a little bit, and that idea, yeah, that, you know, we could have just kept beating this to death before we released the auditor certification program, right? We know
didn't
that
we?
Well, I mean, it feels like we did.
Like 8 years.
But that's not to say that we aren't aware that there are going to be people who come up and be like, oh, so in my case, this, 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 and this, right? And there are probably even going to be people who come up and just say, hey, why didn't you guys think about this? And every one of us is going to hit ourselves in the forehead and be like, yeah, we should have thought about that, right? But we, you know, I think we really strongly felt that, you know, the standard had been out there long enough and it's been kind of beat up long enough that it made sense at this point with where the industry is, with things that have been going on in the industry very recently, that we really just needed to get this process out there and then let the process get better along with everything else. So I guess that's kind of my, you know, don't just flame us, contribute it, right? You know, if you see things that need improved, right, you know, the entire process, if you go to the C4 website, right, it's structured to take input from people in the industry. So you know, help us make it better instead of just being like, oh, stupid CCSS doesn't cover this, or the CCSA exam has this problem in it, right? So.
Yeah, we're definitely willing to and want to hear feedback from it. So we believe that it's really well done, but also none of us are clairvoyant. So we need to hear feedback from other people, although I kind of wish I was. Okay, so a few other questions that we have in the chat. The CCSS is being applied to centralized entities, but is it useful to decentralized entities? Who wants to take that?
I think there's different trade-offs for that, right? And we can get into the whole mindset of centralized versus decentralized, and whether you're providing a service for the user or sovereignty for the end user, a specific privacy-conscious end user. I think one of the considerations specific to the CCSS that I would be interested in is if you're operating in a decentralized capacity, some of the controls recommend things like, do you know who your key operators are, and have you performed the proper background checks? And if you're operating in a system where maybe people are distributed geographically and you have not had that face-to-face verification or contact, or you're operating in a DAO where people are doing work under pseudonyms, right? That may be harder to achieve those controls. So I think it's going to be pros and cons for both systems, depending on what their offering is and what level of compliance they're going to. It may be harder to achieve certain controls in decentralized versus a centralized system. It may actually be easier in some cases with publishing things like proof of reserve, right? You could automate that as a script. There's a lot of different ways, I think, to achieve this stuff and trade-offs depending on how your system's built.
Yeah, and fundamentals around things like, you know, initial key generation, you know, and those sorts of things, they apply regardless, right?
Okay, another question is, does the CCSS delve into smart contract code, such as emphasizing that certain best practices are followed?
I think so. Smart contracts are when this was originally written, right? Not a technology that was fully implemented. Well, to some degree, right? But as new chains, coins, as the system has evolved, we've seen different functionality, different languages, different ways to achieve that smart contract functionality. This is something that, as a committee, we're constantly meeting and throwing questions up about smart contracts and sharding and MPC, and how does that specifically affect key generation, usage, storage, and operations. And when it comes to smart contracts, yes, that's something that we are building and looking at and saying, how does this fit and can these controls be applied to this? There's nothing that says you have to use Solidity at this specific version, but I do imagine at some point in time, we may end up diving deep into those specific types of details. So what I would say is I think for smart contracts in DeFi, it's something we're constantly looking at and evaluating and seeing, how can the standard fit or apply into this specifically? I think with the smart contracts, if I was looking at that against a standard and doing an assessment, I would be looking at the key generation operation. Who is the deployer? Are they known? What's the background information on them? How did they do that deployment and that generation process? And how is that being maintained through the life cycle of the system?
Did you want to add?
There's definitely some areas that aren't gonna be covered too, right? I mean, governance of the smart contract and, you know, things like that, right? That are not currently gonna be covered in the standard.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so another question that we have is, are we going to get a training like we created for the CBP? So yes, that is something in the work. So on C4's end, we have the Certified Bitcoin Professional course and prep book. And for the Certified Ethereum Professional, we have a prep book coming out hopefully by the end of August. And then we'll be creating a course for that. And we'll also be creating something for the CCSS. I don't know, just to be transparent, we don't know what that will look like yet. Like we've said, the standard changes, we need to keep up with different things. That's the same with all of the exams, but we haven't actually, I'm not part of the committee, but the committee, I'm in the meetings. I know the committee hasn't discussed this yet. I don't know if anyone has thoughts on it and wants to talk about it.
There's an awesome video recording from the
blockchain training conference.
Yes, thank you. Back in 2019, was it? That Mr. Stoner did. That is a really good foundation, right? If you want, obviously some things have changed since then, right? In going through this process, and there have been some updates, and the world of crypto has changed around us a little bit as well. So, but it's a really good foundational training for somebody who's wanting to look for that. And that's out there on the C4 YouTube site, right, Jess?
I actually don't know if it's up right now. I don't think it is. But one of the things I was thinking about is it would be fun to do that again, Ron, with you going through and teaching how it all works and doing something now that we're able to be in person again, but to do something like that. I think with something like this, that's it's really large. I mean, the standard's huge. There's a lot more content and there are so many things that come with it and a lot of questions that people are asking. I don't know how, and we can see if this would work, but I don't know how well, like, just a video recording of something would work. I think we first should at least try another, maybe in person, to see what the questions are that come up. But I don't know. I know that's not a good answer, but I don't want to promise something we can't deliver. I do know that we want to create more educational resources around key management and ownership, and then also the CCSS. But I guess stay tuned for what ends up happening with that. We do want there to be an easier way to become a CCSSA in terms of making sure that you understand all the information. And I don't know about you all, but when I sit down to read a large matrix spreadsheet, I'm not like, ooh, this is the best time ever. So I can see how having some type of interactive or video course would be beneficial rather than just like going through the standard by, you know, by yourself, but we'll have to see.
I'd love to teach and educate, Jessica. So that might be a possibility, especially when it comes to security related topics. I think the best advice I could give to people while we're generating more of that educational supplementary content is to, Josh alluded to it earlier, perform mock audits, right? The data is out there. It's open source. You can go consume it. Take your favorite cryptographic information system, the one you use every day or the one you're looking at saying, I wonder how secure this system is, and just go through the checklist, because what that'll do is that will allow you to go pretty deep on things like the entropy of the key, the system that generated the keys. Are they reusing nonce values? What are the K values and digital signatures? And if you're sitting there going, I don't know what Ron's talking about right now, that's a great opportunity to deep dive into that, because these are the types of questions and things that are being validated and being disclosed in these controls on the best way to go about those types of operations. So I would tell people, start to perform those mock audits and you will get to things like, what is a K value and how do digital signatures actually work? And now that I know that, I can see how is this being applied in the system and what level of compliance does that meet with the controls?
Yeah, I think even for people who don't want to be CCSSAs, like someone like me, who has really, I've dove into the standard, I understand a lot of it, but some of the things that you're talking about, like I even would just want to know so that I feel more comfortable using crypto and I understand. I feel like there are different levels. There's like, you aren't sure how crypto works. So maybe you're going to buy from an exchange, you're going to set some of this stuff up, but then you want to, Stephanie Murphy has called it the stairway to self-sovereignty. So you start at like just the basic of buying crypto on an exchange, and then you hopefully learn to move it to maybe a hot wallet, and then you learn how to move it to self-custody hardware wallet, and then maybe you learn about multi-sig, and there's kind of like that whole chain to figure this out. But starting small and then building up, and I think it's the same thing with like the CCSS. Start with the basics, and then as you get more into it, you can start to grow and learn to really understand everything that's a part of it. And I do know, Ron, that the course that you gave in 2019, everybody who attended it that I've heard from absolutely loved it and found it super helpful. And I really wanted to go to it and then couldn't because I was helping run the conference. But I do think doing something like that again would be really helpful. Let's see here. I think we've covered all the questions that are in the chat. Is there anything else anyone who's on the call wanted to talk about before we sign off? Anything about the CCSS or the auditor exam?
I think Noah hit it pretty early. You know, we are only as good as you are with this stuff. There is a lot of things that people are thinking of in their head going, what about XYZ? We want to know about XYZ so we can discuss it and throw it against the wall and then pick it up and brush it off and put it back into the standard, right? And that's going to make us better, the community better, and just all of these systems, these information systems, better overall. So that is the biggest thing I would love to see to this. If you're sitting there going, I've got ideas, I want to help, how can I help? Please reach out, and we would love to get your feedback and start to encapsulate some of those ideas.
Yeah, I'm glad that you said that, because there are 8 people on the committee and they're volunteering their time because, I mean, you all know this, it matters, and you want to make sure that the standard is the best it can be because you work and function within a space that needs some help with security. And so I think it's really cool. I mean, I greatly appreciate all of you volunteering and spending your time to make this standard as good as it can be in the exam. And I think sometimes we see on the outside that there's been some work done, but there is so much work that's happened behind the scenes with the monthly committee meetings and then oftentimes additional meetings to discuss small different pieces with different members. And just there's a lot that has gone into this to make it and be very intentional to make it the best standard it can be. But none of us are of the mentality that it can't get better, that we have everything perfect for everything. I think it's an amazing standard. The amount of effort that's gone into it is just incredible. But there are going to be things that change in the space, obviously, that we're going to need to add and keep track of and all of that. Dirk, did you want to say something else?
No, just kind of along those lines, I wanted to address the rumor that I've heard from a few people that I started growing my beard only to be more like Jameson. And that is absolutely true. But for any of you out there that start growing a beard to be like Jameson, he's still smarter. So, you know, it has limited value.
I saw somebody post on LinkedIn about how you have the best beard in the group, Jameson. So sorry, everyone else. I'm obviously not in that crew, so I wasn't offended, but that was something somebody posted. Okay, so before we end, I just wanted to quickly give, I think the committee, you all are amazing. Behind the scenes, our team at C4 has done just an amazing job. I wanted to thank Erica, Lisa, Miss Adrian, our web developer, Alejandro. There's been so much that's happened to get everything set up with the exam and getting everything put on the website and all the little questions that have come in. So thank you all so much. The C4 team has just really stepped it up and been amazing to make this happen. So thank you to each of you on the committee and to everyone else that has made this possible. We will probably do another live stream at some point to talk about more of the specifics in the standard. But I wanted to just thank you all for being here. And anything else anyone wants to say before we go?
So just a huge thank you to you, Jessica, for keeping us on track. Huge effort from your side. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, we've got a great team here. So thank you all. Appreciate